Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We are approaching our second hour here, and our first hour here tonight on Free Speech TV. I want to remind you all that you can log on to freespeechtv.org, at steinershow.org to watch the show stream live, or go to Free Speech TV on your Direct TV or Dish TV channels and watch us. As we talk this hour on Free Speech TV and here at WEA, where we're broadcasting from, the issue of mortgages. Should there be a moratorium on mortgages? What's really behind all this politically in the world, and why is it going on now? And what should be the response of the American people and the Democratic Party and the government in general? So stay with us for that. One of our guests will be Danny Schechter, independent filmmaker, blogger, and media critic. His latest film is Plunder, The Crime of Our Time. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Support for WEAA is provided by Luna. Information on flooring available at luna.com/traffic or 877-241-LUNA.
Good amount of heavy traffic remains on that west side beltway. We're not out of it yet from 795 down toward Edmondson Avenue. Inner loop a little heavy, 95 toward 70, and then it gets real thick past that toward the 795 ramps. Problems to keep an eye out for as you head along Dogwood at Rolling Run Drive over at Woodlawn. Also Hickory at Pennsylvania for a crash. And now we're looking at an accident. Looks like a pretty big problem along 24 at Hanson Road up in Edgewood. They've called out medics and possible entrapment to the scene there. Give yourself a lot of extra time as you head through that stretch. Earlier problems, Pennhurst at El Dorado, still getting some attention in the city. Just getting word of wrecks along Orams at Middle River Road. And also Red Run at Owings Mills over in Owings Mills for a crash. Matt Tacka, Baltimore area traffic.
Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. Many of you who have been listening to the show for the last 17 years here in this community, we really love having you here, and we've been talking about many local issues that mean a lot to us, as well as national and international issues. But now we're taking some of this local conversation and making it national. Last hour, we talked about teachers and the future of public education. That conversation could be taking place anywhere, whether it's Baltimore, Bangor, Maine, any place in the United States of America. And so those conversations we're going to take national now. We're now part of Free Speech TV, and those of you just tuning in on Free Speech, we're broadcasting here from WEAA in Baltimore, Maryland, the local NPR station here at Morgan State University. And this hour we are going to tackle the issue of mortgages and the moratorium that is not happening in our country, and should it be happening. One of our guests this hour is Danny Schechter. Danny Schechter is an independent filmmaker, blogger, and media critic. His latest film, which we'll talk about with him in the upcoming weeks, is Plunder, The Crime of Our Time, though I'm sure it will come up today. We're also joined in studio by Philip Robinson, Executive Director of Civil Justice Incorporated, an organization that provides legal services to moderate and low-income individuals. And Danny and Phil, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Hey, it's a pleasure. First of all, congratulations to you, you know, on having this new platform, national platform on Free Speech TV. You know, so many people in the Baltimore area have known your work over the years, but now the rest of America gets to try it and gets to hear it. So I think that's a great opportunity for you and the issues you've been championing. Also, for me to be on your show again is great because I actually worked in Baltimore, Maryland in 1963, the summer of the March on Washington, as an organizer in East Baltimore, and unfortunately in that community, things haven't changed all that much.
That's right. Well, we'll have to talk about that one day, your experience here in Baltimore. And what we are going to try to do in this new show here on Free Speech TV, the Mark Steiner Show, is to take all these issues, whether it's about the environment, living wages, gay rights, immigration, race, education, and all the rest that many communities tackle and wrestle with, is to bring communities together around the country to join one another to talk about these issues together with activists across the country linking up, which we hope to do in the coming months and years ahead of us here on the program. But let's tackle the issue ahead of us here at the moment, which is this crisis in foreclosures, and it has many kind of levels here going on. And the question is, the larger issue here, I think America is looking at, and it gets very confusing watching the media talk about this, is the question of moratoriums. We've seen the governor of the state of Maryland and other governors calling for a moratorium or temporary moratorium on foreclosures. President Barack Obama said, no, we should not have it. This is a dangerous thing to do in the United States right now. And America is really wrestling with this issue of, should there be a moratorium? Before we get into the deeper aspects of this and what's behind it, should there be a moratorium and why, Danny?
Well, first of all, you know, I think there should, But I think it goes deeper than we most of us realize. This is not just a problem of homes being foreclosed on. Foreclosures are at the back end of this whole process of mortgages. People have been in their homes, and now they're about to lose them. 14 million people are in this situation, either in or about to enter this foreclosure process. The Bank of America has announced that it is going to, you know, reinstate their foreclosures after a very brief self-imposed moratorium. 102,000 files they are now going to be processing, claiming that every one of them is perfectly legal, okay? The problem with this whole thing is that it focuses on, as I say, the back end. What about the front end? This is when these people were talked into taking these mortgages that the people who were selling them to them knew they couldn't afford, and then they were securitized by Wall Street firms, turned into bonds and securities, rated by ratings agencies as AAA, i.e. no risk, you know, investments, sold all around the world, and on the basis of being asset-backed securities. And guess what? There were no assets behind them. It was a fraud, and it was a fraud from day one. So now we're maybe at day 101. But let's go back to the beginning here and realize that people have been flim-flammed in many cases, and they've been victimized by fraudulent practices. And just today, I don't know if this is moving on your wire yet, but the Washington Post is reporting that a task force has been set up to look into the possible criminality in all of this. It's a little overdue in my mind, but it's a welcome development, because there has been no real investigation of any of this.
Now, what you're talking about is the Obama administration's Financial Fraud Enforcement Task Force that has been called today to investigate whether banks and the companies have submitted flawed paperwork in state foreclosure proceedings and they say misled federal housing agencies. This will also affect Fannie Mae and many other things if that happens. So I want to get into a little bit of what this might mean in the course of this hour. Philip Robinson?
Well, absolutely. I mean, the whole housing financial system here, the whole system, which goes back many, many years, was sort of captured. Originally, you know, we had Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, you know, in part because of redlining back in the 90s, where communities were not able to be loaned to because of racial prejudice and ethnic antagonism, and just the banks were not making any money. They pulled out of many poor neighborhoods, and they wouldn't loan to people, no matter, even if you were a professor, you were a person with a high income in a given neighborhood, as long as you lived within the red line, no money. Then there was a, quote, reform, and the Community Reinvestment Act was passed to try to stop these predatory lending practices. But, you know, the bankers saw in this an opportunity. They realized that poor people actually pay their bills, that poor people are actually good risks. And so they began, you know, basically shoveling money out the door into the pockets of people who couldn't afford to pay it back, with the expectation that they would then default on those mortgages. And meanwhile, the lenders insured their loans so that if people did default, they would make money as well, you know, from AIG and insurance policies. So it was like a criminal enterprise of three industries working together: real estate, finance, and insurance. And these entities, you know, conspired with each other, essentially, in my view. This is what I lay out in my film, Plunder, the Crime of Our Time. But a lot of other people are seeing this now. And there was a film, Casino, shot in Baltimore that showed the practices of targeting poor people, black people, you know, in the inner communities. And there were documents from Wells Fargo and other lenders who talked about the mud people in Baltimore. That's why they described the community in a racially, you know, insensitive manner, basically targeting the poorest people and victimizing them.
Yeah, I mean, not to me, not only racially insensitive, but I'm just blatantly racist.
Okay. Let's go all the way here.
Mark, thanks for having me. Thanks for having me on the show again. I'm happy to be here to talk about foreclosures. And to answer your first question, should we have a moratorium or not? I think the answer is pretty complicated. And I don't disagree with Danny that the big picture, there's a lot that needs to be investigated. But in the now, the issue of a moratorium is, what good will that do? My position is, and what we've been doing at Civil Justice, is representing hundreds and thousands of Maryland homeowners who are facing foreclosure. And the problem that the lenders have at the moment is they do not have good title to the properties that they foreclosed on by many firms, many large firms in the state. And then many of the foreclosure actions that are presently filed include fraudulent documents, and they will not get good title to those properties. And so based on what the Court of Appeals did today and what we will be doing at Civil Justice in the next few weeks is asking the courts to dismiss hundreds or thousands of these cases that are based in large part on fraudulent documents that were untrue facts that were put into evidence before the court. There were documents that were forged in many cases, and that will in effect create a moratorium in that the courts, I'm hoping and we hope, will tell the banks you need to do it the right way to get clear title. You're never going to get clear title with fraudulent forged documents.
But let's dive into this for a minute. I want to get our listeners to call in at 410-319-8888. Wherever you're listening to in the country, if you have a cell phone that's not long distance, just call 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And pretty soon we'll have the 800 number installed here. But the issue is, I'd like to hear your stories. I'd like to hear what you've been facing in terms of this mortgage crisis, this foreclosure crisis that hits us all, because it hits us all in very personal ways. And your thoughts on what do you think we should be doing and how you think the U.S. government should respond, how our state governments should be responding to this at 410-319-8888. We're talking with Danny Schechter and Philip Robinson, 410-319-8888. But one of the issues here, I think, is important to really kind of parse through. And we touched on it a minute ago, the three of us and Danny, when we were talking about the banks and not really owning these notes. I mean, if you don't realize, the banks do not own a lot of the mortgage notes that they are allegedly holding, that they're really being held by a lot of groups. Some of them even fly-by-night operators who make a lot of money off of this. And this is also a piece of where the derivative of madness came from. I mean, so there's a complexity here that we don't really make very simple for people to understand.
Well, let me explain.
Well, let me go, Danny, then we'll go to Philip. Okay, Danny, Philip.
Okay. I mean, there is something very simple here, you know, which is clogged in all of this legal jargon and technicality and real estate law and property rights and, you know, various mortgage agreements and the like. You know, it boils down to an old, I guess it was sports phrase, you know, we was robbed, you know. People, in many cases, went into transactions with good intentions. They were told, essentially, that, you know, their homes would always go up in value, that they can take equity out, they can resell it. Even though they got a low, you know, initial rate, you know, they would be protected. And then, of course, what happened was is that the adjustable rate mortgages went up and up beyond people's ability to pay. The job market collapsed, and many people were out of work, didn't have the money to pay, and the banks began to move to try to steal this property back, in which they didn't have clear title to. So all of this can be true at one point or another. You know, in the process, it's a complicated process to be sure. But, you know, the basic reality here is this is not a left-right issue. This is a right-wrong issue. This is an issue of economic justice. And this is what is not being talked about in our media and by our media. And part of the reason for that is if you look at a Sunday newspaper, you know, it's filled with, or it used to be filled with, real estate ads. Okay, that's where they made their money. The real estate business, you know, and the newspaper business were sort of joined at the hip. And the media itself is owned in large part by a lot of these investment firms and what have you. So we never really were being told the truth about this by our media either.
So, Mark, most of the folks can understand it this way. When I explain them and we meet with homeowners around the state at different forums where, you know, thousands and hundreds of homeowners come to, when they purchased their loan and got a loan or a refinance, the lender that funded that loan immediately flipped it 90% of the time to a Wall Street trust or some other investment group. But the lender, the originating lender, kept the servicing rights. So the homeowner or the borrower didn't have any idea, because they kept making their payments to the same entity, that some Wall Street trust owned their loan. And that's what's really complicated it, because as we know now, there wasn't any regulations on Wall Street. No one was paying attention. And AIG insured all the paper, but they really didn't look at any of the paper. And then the taxpayers were left to bail it all out. So for the average homeowner who's listening, wondering, well, my loan's owned by the bank that I originated it with. That's probably not true. You're just continuing to make the servicing payments. And the irony here is that the servicing rights are what's the profit of the loan. The originating lenders made that money, and then they flipped it to Wall Street. And then all of us who have investments in different trusts or retirement accounts, those probably bought the investments on Wall Street. So we're all sort of a stakeholder in it.
Danny, go ahead. Then I'm going to open the phones right after your comment.
Pardon me?
Go ahead, Danny. Then I'm going to open the phones right after your comment.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like 60% of the subprime borrowers could have qualified for prime rates, but there were more fees built into these subprime rates. You were paying more, in a sense, for less security in the subprime market. The people doing the selling knew that, but they did it because their profits were so immense. And it's not just a domestic situation. It wasn't just Wall Street firms. Wall Street firms, in turn, began to slice and dice all of this into structured investment products and sold it overseas. So the Bank of China, the Bank of Japan, Deutsche Bank, all these other banks bought into this on the premise that these were, you know, very safe and sound investments, which they weren't. And they ended up writing off billions of dollars.
Let's go to the phones here. Listen to the Mark Steiner Show right now here on 88.9 FM, WEAA, but also watching on Free Speech TV and at freespeechtv.org and steinershow.org. Number here is 410-319-8888. You just heard Danny Schechter, independent filmmaker, blogger, political activist, media critic. His most recent film is Plunder, The Crime of Our Time. And you can also see his work as The Dissector. You can log on to that on our website as well. We're joined by Philip Robinson, Executive Director of Civil Justice Incorporated, an organization that provides legal services to moderate and low-income individuals. 410-319-8888. And we'll go first to C. Eagleheart Williams.
Yes, good evening.
Good evening.
I think there's a few overarching data points that are really not being addressed. And that is, you know, you have intellectual capital, access to capital, and human capital. And all of those three pronged dimensions, if you will, involve finance, a thought process, and people to carry out the strategy and approach. What's not being addressed from a legal standpoint, and what's not being addressed from the film producer, is that a lot of the conspirators that contributed to Q4 2008 market meltdown were the same contributors that are foreclosing on properties and using, let's say, less than best practices, strategies, and approaches to accumulate or acquire these foreclosed properties. And let's keep in mind, gentlemen, this is not just happening within the minority, MUD, whatever community you reference. It's also happening in properties in Bethesda, Beverly Hills, et cetera. So it's crossing the gamut. And let's keep in mind, you had a lot of smart people that got ripped off by Bernie Madoff. Closing point, systemic inherent conflicts of interest is what's driving this country, this world, into the ground. It's not complexities where it's too complex to decipher. It's systemically at fundamental roots, systemic inherent conflicts of interest that are overtaking the human spirit that built this country into what the founding fathers had envisioned from the very beginning. God bless.
Thank you, Eagleheart. And Danny Schechter, as the news dissector, I don't think you disagree with what he said, would you?
No, I don't. Actually, you know, he might be interested to know I've written two books about this, Plunder, Investigating Our Economic Calamity, and a book called The Crime of Our Time, which is a companion to my film, where I detail all of this. These were the smartest people in the room, so to speak. That's why to say that these people somehow, you know, they made a mistake, it was just an error, they just didn't get it, they thought real estate always goes up, but it didn't. This was a strategy. This was a plan. And, you know, and they successfully basically carried it out. And that's why I believe the only way to prosecute any of this is under the RICO laws, which are used to prosecute the mafia, because this fits the technical definition of a criminal enterprise. All these people working together over across industry lines basically to engage in theft and to transfer wealth, which has happened in this country and is happening now, from the poorest people and working people to the richest people.
I mean, I would just say, I think the callers pegged it, but, you know, and what we try to do sort of on the ground floor of legal services is that the caller's description, that is a case. And we've trained, along with the Pro Bono Resource Center of Maryland, 1,000 Maryland attorneys to represent homeowners, and the time and talent that we have at Civil Justice is to help those attorneys bring affirmative claims against defendants who are still in business and still around. And we got some of the leading cases in the nation where we've been able to get recovery. It's unfortunate. I wish I could solve what's happening in Washington, but I have a client in Bethesda, or I have a client in Upper Marlboro or Baltimore that I'm more worried about, frankly, than what's going on in Washington, because I'm not sure I can ever solve that problem.
Well, I want to talk about the connection here between what's happening in Baltimore and Bismarck, North Dakota, and what's happening in Washington. Actually, the State Bank, Bismarck, North Dakota, is probably doing better than we are in Baltimore. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Mike, you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Mike.
How y'all doing?
Good.
Listen, I'm so morally shocked and outraged. I'm so surprised that the banks are cheaters. Oh, my goodness. I have to abstain from that and let you more learned people about economics comment on these pigs. What can I say? There is another point about economics I'd like to address. Is I think the root problem when you foreclose on somebody's mortgage, it's because they don't have enough money to pay the damn bills. People are getting laid off. There's an economic crisis in here that's precipitating this mortgage crisis. This mortgage crisis isn't overturning the world economy, which is in fact happening. It's a symptom of the fact that the economic system is collapsing and people don't have money to pay their bills.
There's certain, I mean, Mike, I think you're right. There's a lot of people that are unemployed and can't make their payments, and we're all empathetic and to those folks in that situation. But my experience on the front line, frankly, is there's a lot of people who are working hard, and as Danny keeps going talking about, is they got duped basically into a loan that was unaffordable from the get-go. They've done nothing wrong. They trusted that loan officer said they could afford it or they could refinance in 2 years and into a cheaper loan, and it was just a bait and switch. The banks clearly know what's going on, and they knew what was going on. And you know, I'll tell you from my side, the enforcement, the problem with the enforcement on the banks is most of it's done at the federal government level, and the previous administration and even the current one has not taken very strong steps to enforce the unfair and deceptive practices that these banks have done to lots of people.
See, I think that that's an important point. Because, you know, I think the great disappointment for supporters of President Obama, you know, who has tried to do some important things, you know, is to look at how he's handled this foreclosure issue. And programs like HAMP and you know, federal programs to help homeowners have largely been totally failures. And you know, so, and the attitude towards, you know, the whole notion of a moratorium as well, it's going to hurt the whole economy, let's not take action like that. It's just offered up with so little sympathy, compassion, and empathy for the people who are struggling with these issues. I mean, you know, I defer to my friend from criminal justice here who works every day with these people and hears these stories, and I'm sure you have to, you know, in the end, it's hard to remain sensitive because you've heard so many of them. It seems, you know, but I get these kinds of letters, and I was also down, you know, at several events done by NACA, the Neighborhood Association, the Neighborhood Assistance Corporation of America, which is a bit controversial. But, you know, when they announced an event in Washington 2 summers ago, in which I went down to, they expected 2,000 people. 25,000 people showed up, and it was at the Capitol Hilton Hotel there on 16th Street, across the street from the Washington Post. And the Washington Post didn't bother to cover it till the last day. They looked out the window, didn't even see all the people lining the hotel, okay, who were there with their mortgage papers in hand. These were not homeless people. These were people who worked for the metro, worked for the city government, were, you know, lawyers, teachers, and others who were terrified about the prospect of losing their homes that they've worked so hard for. And this is a human tragedy on a massive level. and we don't have many champions, you know, in our government speaking out on their behalf. And this is also true, I must say, of the left and the progressive movement, which has been pretty silent about all of this and has not been, you know, showing a lot of solidarity for the people who are going through this hell.
Well, I want to talk in a few minutes about this silence and why there's so much silence in politics around this issue right now and fear of addressing this issue in a larger way. But first, I want to get there's a lot of people calling in. Let me get some voices from our communities here at 410-319-8888. Daniel, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi, Daniel. Welcome.
Thank you. I just had a very quick question. I understand hearing things from the Wall Street Journal, from a lot of the big banks, is that their sense is that they're really isn't anything factually wrong with the affidavits, and that most, if not all, of the foreclosures are actually legal and accurate. It's just, you know, signing issues. Someone didn't do their due diligence there. But I believe I heard Phil mention earlier that, at least in some of the cases he's seen, that there have been some factual inaccuracies in some of the affidavits. And I just wonder if you could clarify that or maybe give a few examples that he's heard, because I think that would be a helpful way to, at least from the communication standpoint of, you know, the big banks and everything talking about how there's nothing really wrong here. But if there is, in fact, some factual problems, I think that might be a helpful thing to kind of help push that movement forward. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Philip.
Daniel, the talking point that I've been describing all of this is it's about integrity in the courts. And if the affiant, the person testifying in the affidavit, didn't actually sign it or didn't even read what they were signing, then that's not a true affidavit. And the Maryland courts came out today with a new emergency rule saying they're going to call these affiants and the lawyers who've been signing these things purportedly or not. And the Baltimore Sun reported a week ago that two attorneys and their law firms are under investigation. The Secretary of State's office denotarized or decertified, I think, 6 to 9 notaries from these two law firms because they were doing false notarizations. And the lawyers purportedly presented themselves before the notary, but in fact they didn't, and somebody else signed the lawyer's name. That just screws up the whole title. So the way I nut ball it down, what you described is how the lenders are responding. The facts are all correct in the documents. The problem is, do we want our courts, and do we want parties in our courts to produce honest and truthful information? Or are we going to allow parties, and this is what the banks want, they want the administration to give them a bailout, to file documents that are wrong, that are forgeries, and that are false? And I think, at least from my perspective, most people, no matter where you are in the spectrum, want honest courts. And that's what this issue is about to me, more so than homeowners. It's about honest courts.
Well, you know, the problem is, like down in Florida, there have been a number of reports about, you know, judges who got money from real estate firms for their elections and re-elections, who basically spend something like 30 seconds on each case just accepting what the bank attorneys say, not giving people a real right to challenge it. It's been a sort of kangaroo court situation in many states. And this has led to a tremendous amount of fear, you know, in the public. I mean, you're saying, well, let's hear from people. Please call me. You know, tell me your story. Well, a lot of people are afraid to. I mean, I have a little letter in front of me here, and somebody wrote me a detailed story about what happened to them, and the person came back and said, please, you can post it, but can it be anonymous? Quote, I'm just so scared. I'm under so much stress that this is happening to me, that these dogs could get away with scamming the American people. Very sad that we, the middle class, are being taken to the cleaners like this, and there's no one on our side helping. And this is just a response from one woman, okay, who's written this, you know, powerful letter to me, which I'm going to post about her mortgage experience. And, you know, there are people willing to fight back, and there are people who are fighting back. But many people have been intimidated, you know, when you get these bank lawyers in there and basically accusing the borrower of being irresponsible. It's their fault, you know, not accepting any responsibility, not acknowledging any guilt. The other day, there was a settlement in the case of the biggest mortgage company in America, okay? And they don't acknowledge any guilt. They don't admit anything. they just paid a fine. Okay, $60 million, no problem. Where do I pay? And this is the part of the problem. There's been no effective enforcement and prosecution of these people. Not everywhere. At the state level, the state attorney generals around the country are a lot more aggressive in many ways than the federal government.
We're going to take a very brief break, and I want to encourage listeners to hold on. Lamont and Monty, the next two callers up, we're going to come to your calls when we return. From what Danny was just saying, we're glad there are lawyers like Philip Robinson who will take some of these cases and fight them in court. We'll be right back with Danny Schechter and Philip Robinson. We're going to talk about why there's so much silence in politics about this and what's going on, and Danny's idea also about what needs to be done from the larger level of going after the folks who did this in the first place to Philip Robinson's work from the ground up, defending people who are losing their homes and keeping them in their homes. Number here is 410-319-8888. You're listening to the Mark Steiner Show on Free Speech TV here at 88.9 FM WEAA, the voice of the community, from where we are broadcasting our home station. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. You are part owner of the bank. For more information, you go to www.mecu.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and here at WEAA, I want to remind you that support for WEAA is provided by Baltimore for Healthy Babies. Far too many babies in Baltimore City die before their first birthdays because they're not sleeping safe. Your baby should always sleep safe, alone, on their back, in a crib. For more information on how to help your baby sleep safe, go to healthybabiesbaltimore.com. And you're listening to the Mark Steiner Show on Free Speech TV, broadcasting here from WEAA 88.9 FM in Baltimore, Maryland. Our number is 410-319-8888. You can write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. We are talking by phone from New York with Danny Schechter, whose latest film is Plunder, The Crime of Our Time. You can see his writings and blogs and work at newsdissector.com. He's an independent filmmaker, blogger, media critic, and political activist. Philip Robinson is in studio. He's executive director of Civil Justice Incorporated, an organization that provides legal services to moderate and low-income individuals, and is fighting the cases in courts here in Maryland to keep people in their homes. 410-319-8888 is the number. Let's go right to the phones, and we'll come back to our questions from here. And next up is Lamont. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, Lamont. You're on the air.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, you know, I just wanted to make a comment. I'm glad you pointed out that when this issue first broke with regards to problems in the mortgages, I was amazed how so many people, particularly in the media, were so quick to basically put it all on the borrowers, when in actuality it was the banks with, you know, their little hidden motivations to make more money. I am appalled that the politicians that were elected by the people have watched this happen. And should have known that this type of thing would have happened and did absolutely nothing. And now, while the people are struggling, they are still silent. And I don't know if there's something, I hope there is something, that we could point out or identify the politicians that kind of turned a blind eye and allowed this travesty to occur, and somehow hold them accountable, at least expose them to the media. And in closing, my question is, what is the benefit of these banks to act so quickly to get these houses back, given the fact that the housing market, no one's really buying houses now? Why would they rush to take back, or why are they rushing to get these homes back? That, you know, at least you have, at least, you know, at least if somebody's in arrear in their mortgage, at least you do have someone occupying a house who's paying something. So I'm kind of confused. Why are they rushing to get these homes back?
Lamont, that's an incredibly good question. Let me first start with Danny. We'll go over to Philip. Danny?
Well, you know, the banks themselves are in financial distress in many cases. They're trying to get the debt off of their books. They're trying to essentially do new deals of all kinds. And, you know, these loans are sort of festering there. And, you know, they even though they're doing certainly well thanks to the TARP payments and the government bailouts, they themselves are under financial pressure, too.
I mean, part of what's going on, I think, Lamont, is stuff that we'll never know, and that it's sometimes cheaper for the bank to go to foreclosure because they have insurance on the loan, And this is why we all bailed out AIG.
Our tax money insurance. Fannie Mae insurance.
I'm not defending
our
it.
I'm not defending it,
but this is the dilemma that I have when I'm helping a homeowner. It makes no sense to go to sale, or to, they should accept a short sale, or they should do a modification because I have a borrower who can make a reasonable, profitable payment. But they insist on going to sale, I think, because it's cheaper for them to do that, and they'll make more money by making the insurance claim that, of course, we, the taxpayers, are paying.
And
they also do it with all this sanctimonious rhetoric about property rights and the law and the law and the law. You know, we have to uphold the law. You signed the agreement, you know, and you didn't honor your payment, and therefore you knew this was going to happen, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, their infractions, their total contempt for the law. You know, the other day, I don't know if you saw this, Phil, but the comedy, you know, Daily Show featured a report about the Mortgage Brokers Association in Washington, okay, who walked away from their offices and their loans to move to another office and just didn't pay their own bills. I mean, this is so riddled with hypocrisy on every level, and it, you know, it's a disgrace.
But and as you, I think you pointed out, Danny Schechter, and some others have pointed out that in your on your site News Dissector, that that a lot of these major banks are also invested in companies that collect your debts. If you don't pay your property taxes, it's the same bank that holds your mortgage. It also owns a company that's going after the and piling money on top of money when you're having a harder time there. There's a lot of very, which should be but is not, illegal collusion going on when it comes to who's manipulating the money in this country.
Well, you know, there you go. I mean, this is, you know, this is a situation where, you know, the refusal to scrutinize these institutions really shows something about who has power in America and who doesn't. You know, these are extremely powerful institutions. They spend a lot of money. They advertise. They give a lot of political donations. They lobby for their measures. You know, they are disproportionately a lot more powerful than certainly the borrowers are or the American people, for that matter.
If I can, Mark, Philip, I'd like to comment on Lamont's other major point that he talked about, which was, you know, the politicians and accountability. And this is completely unsolicited, and I'm not on anybody's campaign. But I have to say, at least in the last 4 years, Governor O'Malley's done as much or more than any other state governor that I know within the authority of a governor or in a state to regulate and rein in a lot of these practices. And I give him a lot of kudos for that. And I don't know the man other than I meet him at functions and stuff, and he doesn't really know me. But I think he's done way more than any other governor that I know. And compared to the candidate that he's running against, the candidate that he's running against doesn't want regulation in this and is complaining with the fact that there's not enough mortgage brokers than there were under his administration. And under his administration, they gave mortgage broker licenses to anybody who wanted one. And I have one mortgage fraud case, and not to divest too far, but I have one mortgage fraud case with a woman who got a license under the previous administration here in Maryland by the candidate running for governor now. Her only experience before becoming a mortgage broker was she was an exotic stripper. And what did she turn around and do? She stole 400 homes from people. And it sounds funny, and it is
funny,
to some degree.
Sadly funny.
But I have 400 homeowner clients who got their homes stolen by this lady because she developed the biggest mid-Atlantic mortgage scheme in the country, all because she got a license from the previous governor's administration, and we got to do more, and we got to have a certain level of accountability. Who's going to get the privilege of a license?
But we've also seen, it was in the New York Times just this last few days, a front page article, and when the establishment press, the New York Times, started writing it, you know, it's bubbling to the surface and can't be let go, is that banks now are being accused of hiring people who gave out these mortgages who knew nothing about mortgages. And that's part of the reason they're being investigated now by the federal government and this financial fraud enforcement task force for things like that. I mean, this is the madness of making money has kind of gripped the nation. And as you pointed out, Danny, I mean, it's also been part of the bubbling up of who controls the wealth and who's controlling the dialogue and the messages going out to the public.
Well, they call them the Burger King kids. But these Burger King kids know more about Whoppers than they know about this Whopper of a fraud, okay? I mean, when I got my own mortgage, the bank sent the notary over, And I had some questions, and the guy says, well, I can't answer those questions. Let's just stop the mortgage. I said, no, I've been waiting months for this. I need the money. I need to get this to happen. You know, so I ended up signing on the bottom line for something I really had serious doubts about and felt deceived about. And, you know, this is true of a lot of people.
Me too. 410-319-8888. Monty, you're on the air.
Good evening. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I agree with the previous caller that there's been much too much news in the media about how the borrowers have had the low mortgage IQs and how everything has been on them. The point I want to make is that I think the mortgage industry probably got ahead of itself in this crisis with all the slicing and dicing and sophisticated derivative products that out of pure greed, they probably didn't understand themselves. And ultimately, the bottom line is that the chain of title as a result of slicing and dicing all these loans is very confusing. And that's probably one of the reasons that a lot of the banks are not really objecting too much to a lot of these moratoriums at the state level, because they want to try to get their ducks in order as a result of this chain of title issue, because it could mean that a lot of these borrowers don't even owe any debt if the title from the borrower to the so-called investor or investors, whoever you want to call them, can't really be lined up. And I just wanted to make that point, because if we can't establish in our country that there's trust in the chain of title, then we don't have a mortgage industry. And if we don't have a mortgage industry, then we're just going to be the richest third world country on the planet. So I'll leave it at that.
Monty, thanks so much.
Well, another factor here, which you can't, recognize, that's being recognized. If that's true, if people don't have to pay, the banks themselves are going to suffer big losses. And I think one of the fears of the Obama administration is that this could lead, to a collapse of even more banks, and could require another TARP bailout of some kind. And it looks like the Federal Reserve Bank is getting ready to do just that, to put more money into the industry, because they see how shaky the whole thing is.
I mean, I'm a little disappointed, frankly, to hear all the rhetoric out of Washington talking about if the administration does anything, it's going to cause a collapse of the housing market. That's just a bunch of bunk. And here's a sort of a real-world diner conversation that actually took place last weekend. I took my kids to the diner in Silver Spring.
You're from Baltimore.
No.
Diners.
I'm in Silver Spring.
Okay.
I took my kids to the diner, and the fellow next to me is talking to his friend, and he says to his friend, here's an interesting thought. And they didn't even know what I do, but he says to his friend, here's an interesting thought. What if we take all the REO properties, all the bank-owned properties, and we take them off the market for 2 years as a penalty for their shenanigans and being dishonest in court? That will tighten up the housing market, because the only houses left on the market then will be houses where we won't have this chain of title problem that I've described earlier and some of the callers have described. And if you think about it, and I'm not an economist, but intuitively, if you could take the REOs off and you have less houses that are available, then we're going to see housing prices come back. And the banks have some penalty other than just getting another bailout. And I certainly hope we're not going to give them one of those. I mean, they dug this hole themselves. They've gotten one bailout. I can't imagine why any taxpayer who's on time and current on their loan or otherwise would want to do that or support that.
Now, I wonder if either one of you, what your comments are when Sean Donovan, who's our Secretary of Housing and Urban Development in the President Barack Obama's administration, said last weekend that, quote, a national blanket moratorium on all foreclosure sales would do far more harm than good, hurting homeowners and home buyers alike. And that one, in response to anonymous, that this was from the Washington Post, one anonymous political activist in the Democratic Party said, the politics are let's have a moratorium, but shutting down foreclosures has the potential of shutting down the whole housing market, which isn't helpful to anybody, and they're just afraid to take that on. So what are your thoughts about that?
Well, there's an old song, which side are you on? It seems like the Obama administration always seems to come up with a rationale for being on the side of the banks. It's always in the best interest of the economy. There's going to be a recovery. Things are going to, you know, and there hasn't been. These policies have not worked. If you take a look at what's happening in terms of their economic strategy, Romer is gone, okay? Larry Summers is going, you know, thank goodness. You know, the budget director is gone. You know, they have not been doing a very effective job on all of this. And the people who might be able to actually offer something concrete, like Robert Reich, like Paul Krugman, these people are just being ignored, okay? I mean, you know, Krugman wrote today, you know, in his blog, he said, this administration can be accused of always missing an opportunity to find an opportunity. I mean, you know, here are people who are desperate. Here's a country that's looking to its leaders to stand up and against the banks and against this greed that's been going on, you know, without any checks. I mean, the banks just announced, what was it, $144 billion in new bonuses and compensation for bankers and, you know, rewards essentially for what they're doing. And nobody says a word about this. In England, there are some efforts to regulate compensation, but not here.
Mark, I think that the problem with the comments that you're describing from the administration is that, you know, we have a court system that we have touted around the world, and we've asked other countries who don't have a court system like ours to model after ours. But our court system is a mockery. When we allow parties to come into court and lie and file false documents with no consequences, and that's what the administration signaled, then I don't think our court system's frankly any better than that's in Iran that we've complained about or in China. And so the issue that the administration needs to, in my opinion, take a hold of, because I'm not sure who else is going to do it, is we need honest courts, and there needs to be some repercussions and penalties for the lenders who've come in sloppily and not done things the right way. And in what we've seen so far in Maryland is their representatives have filed false and fraudulent documents. And there's got to be consequences for that.
Well, you remember the case in Ohio. I think it was a Judge Boyko there, where Deutsche Bank was coming in to foreclose on 12 properties. And, you know, they said, Your Honor, you know, these people haven't paid in over a year. You know, and the defense people said, well, you're right, but, you know, we've had a hard time here. Can't you give us more time? And they said, absolutely not. And then they said, okay, can we see the mortgage, please? Can you produce the mortgage that you are foreclosing on the basis of? And the banks could not produce the mortgages. And, you know, as a result, the judge basically stayed the foreclosures. But, you know, not all judges have the kind of courage and awareness of this particular judge.
Let's try to get a few more callers in before the end of the hour. 410-319-8888. Robert, you're on the air.
Yes, I've got a mortgage with PNC Bank.
Uh-huh.
And I've spent 2 years. I got a trial modification, and then they took it away from me, even though I paid them on time. Then they made me pay all the back money. They made me pay late fees. I got a letter from them saying, don't do anything. We'll send you a coupon book. But when I talked to the collection people, well, that was PNC Bank, not PNC Mortgage. That was your second mortgage, not your first mortgage. And as of last week, I got a letter where we can start back at square one on getting a loan modification. And it will now be going on almost 2 years. And I challenge, I'll stay on, and I'll give you people my phone number or my email, and I'll challenge anyone at any level of PNC Bank to answer my questions or help me.
Fat chance. I don't think they're going to answer you, certainly not on the air. They've avoided, you know, any kind of visible confrontations. They you know, in many cases, homeowners report, you know, great difficulty in even reaching anybody at the bank, getting any response at all. They write long emails. They call. They leave messages. They write letters. They write to legislators. You know, people are busy with doing this every single day, and the banks just, you know, dismiss it. Don't even pay attention to it.
And then I damaged my credit, even though I did have the money to pay the mortgage in full during that time period. And I'm a steelworker at Sprouts Point. I'm still working, but I'm facing potential layoff. So obviously at this point in time, it's all the more important that I get that modification.
You could be facing a layoff. It might be closing down the mill, right?
Yes, half the people are already laid off. Now, hopefully a buyer will come. Hopefully we will continue. But anything is possible at this time. And I'm certainly eligible for a modification because I've had a significant reduction in income. And I worked with Acorn early in this process, and then Acorn, of course, disappeared. So I have no legal support or help either.
Philip, can you give him some thoughts here?
Yeah. One of the things you can do, Robert, is what just for all the callers.
This is a Maryland caller. He works at Sparrow's Point.
One of the things that Robert's describing is what we describe as HAMP limbo. And the statistics show this, and this is one of the most disappointing things out of the administration, is that, you know, there's so many homeowners that have been in trial modification plans for months and months and months and months and years even, and they're just not getting processed. So they can hire the Burger King kids to originate the loans, but they can't hire them to process the modifications. So, Robert, you've been in limbo, and you started with one housing counseling agency that's no longer providing services. But you can call my office, and we can get you referrals to other free agencies since you're in the state of Maryland. And our number is 410-706-0174. But we have free housing counselors all throughout the state of Maryland that Governor O'Malley's has set up this very sophisticated system. We can get some assistance to you, and if need be, we can get you pro bono or low bono attorneys to help you. But we need to try to get this wrapped up, as you know, because you need that permanent mod in case the worst case scenario happens next.
You people in Maryland should be thankful that this service exists and that there are people out there fighting on your behalf. In many states, we have no such people. People don't know who to turn to or what to do. And organizations like Acorn, as we know, were destroyed by dirty tricks of various kinds, particularly to disempower poor people, because they were out there registering people and fighting for their rights, and they became a target of a small group that was successful and basically killing them off with the help of a Congress that didn't have any guts.
This has been great. I appreciate the two of you taking all your time here with our listeners today. It's been great to have you both, Danny Schechter. I really do appreciate you taking the time. It's great to talk to you once again.
Thank you, Mark, and really good luck on this, and free speech. You made a big, smart decision here in bringing Mark on the air, because I think this show is going to become very popular, and people are going to turn to it for the kind of truth that, is so conspicuously absent in the media. And if anybody wants to reach me, I'm at dissector@mediachannel.org, and the website for my film is Plunder, The Crime of Our Time. .com.
And you can link to that on our website. Danny Schechter, thanks so much. And Philip Robinson, good to have you in the studio. And you can go to Civil Justice. The number is
410-706-0174.
That's here locally in Maryland.
And we're here in Maryland. And if you're nationwide, you can call our office and we'll connect you with a pro or low bono attorney around the country.
Thank you both so much for being here. And we'll continue on this. It's been great to have you both. I want to remind you, before we jump out to everything here, about WEAA, where we're broadcasting from on free speech. Support for WEAA is provided by Mid-Atlantic Neurosurgical Associates, MANA, a center dedicated to those who suffer from brain, spine, and pain disorders. With three Baltimore locations, MANA's team of pain management physicians and surgeons provide a wide range of sensitive, compassionate treatment options to improve the health and well-being of its patients. You can go to manapaincenter.com or call 410-601-8314. And the Mark Steiner Show is produced at the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. We're engineered tonight by Brian Boone. Our interns this evening have been Daniel Gillespie and Shari Burns. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cut. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, and have information on our guests and all their work, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And all of you around the country, please let us know what you think. Give us your ideas and thoughts. Send your videos and ideas to our program for a future programs we want to do, and for Free Speech TV and Public Radio to be EAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.